When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now, go.
As a plant-based cheese company, Daiya has never talked about beef in an ad before, because someone somewhere once had a beef with saying beef and plant-based together. So putting a slice of Daiya cheese on a beef burger, not okay. Well, our delicious melty cheese has a beef with your beef about beef, because any step towards plant-forward eating is a step in the right direction. Daiya, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. Now made with Daiya Oat Cream Blend.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's the Final Word New Zealand Australia Daily, day 4 of the Christchurch Test, coming to you from the very middle of Hagley Oval. There's the ground staff behind us, over my shoulder if you're on the video,
having a sit on the pitch
and having a nice old time.
A pitch party. Remember when that was a thing?
A pitch party. The show's brought to you by Cbus Super. And the Test match is over in 4 days. We said it might be a belter of a day 4. It was. Adam, please tell us all about it in the space of 30 seconds.
Australia resumed needing 202 runs to reach their victory target of 279 with 6 wickets in hand. That was 5 wickets in hand when Travis Head spooned a catch to point in the second over after the delayed start. They were 80 on the board, 5 down in a world of pain. 199 to go. Enter Alex Carey under the pump. 98 not out. His best innings for Australia. Batted so well. Out of the 140 with Mitchell Marsh, who made 80. There was a late twist when Ben Sears took 2 in 2. He was on a hat-trick. They needed 59 to win. Enter Pat Cummins, 32 not out. Ice is another chase. He's 4th in the space of 9 months. They win by 3 wickets.
Goodness me. The point where, the 2-2.
And not a bad summary, it's almost.
That was good, yeah.
I'm informed.
It was almost.
It's a shame we're finishing up today.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit like Alex Carey. Your last hit of the season was a good one. It was so nearly a hat-trick as well, because Cummins reaches for the slightly wider ball from Ben Sears, spoons it off the toe into the cordon, and it bounces just in front of Daryl Mitchell and goes through the cordon for 4.
Would have dropped it anyway.
I mean, good.
Sorry.
Good,
I'm a good bit chance. Down on New Zealand right good now. We'll come to this.
Yeah. Well, certainly on Daryl Mitchell's slip catching, which did not go to plan. But Jesus, I mean, had he imagine a world where he takes that, a hat trick at what 5 down? Suddenly it's 8 down for the addition of 9. You would have seen a hat trick, and they would have needed 59 with 2 wickets in hand, and Carey and Lyon trying to bat for the win would be a very different prospect from Carey and Cummins trying to bat for the win. It was so nearly that situation. But even so, 3 wickets in hand, 59 to get, that is a difficult proposition. Mm. That is still bowling team on top. And they should have won it. New Zealand should have won it. Everybody was doing the thing at the start of the day. What do you think will happen? And I was like, look, there will be one bad shot and there will be one wicket, and that's all they need. They break the Head-Marsh partnership, then they should go through them. And they should have gone through them. 5 in hand with 199 to get, the batting team is not supposed to win that test match.
I mapped it out. This is a 7 down piece. So last year when England were defeated by 1 run, they needed 56 with the last 3 wickets. Remember, it was 59 today. The tied test in 1986, funnily enough, went to that 16 to get with 3 wickets in hand. Mm-hmm. And 1960, slightly different, chaotic last over, 7 runs to win when the 7th wicket fell. So this exceeded all of those. But you know, they've got the muscle memory now. Mentioned Cummins, and Brett's comparing him to Michael Bevan at the moment, and fair enough. It was the World Cup semi-final. It was the Afghanistan.
He's not left-handed.
It's not left-handed, but he's just, the way he puts pressure on teams when coming in at that point is such an impressive thing to do. I think it's because he's such a figure in the game. Like, Cummins is such an esteemed figure. He's such a bloody good cricketer that even though he's coming in at number nine, he doesn't feel like a number nine. He feels like this is Pat Cummins, the aura around him. And I think fielding teams succumb to that a wee bit. Semi-final against South Africa, home in a close chase. I can't remember if they won by 3 wickets or 2 wickets, but it was close. And famously last year, putting on 55 for the 8th wicket with Nathan Lyon, the ninth wicket rather, at Edgbaston. So
And the
Afghanistan game where he played shed anchor for 2.5 hours with Glenn Maxwell. So there is a body of evidence to suggest that Cummins is the perfect man for this situation. And Carey, I mean, what a time to step up.
Yeah, I mean, look, Carey, we've talked about it on this show, whether he was in the hot seat, as they've been liking to say, whether he was under pressure. Not so much the fact that he made three low scores, but the way that he made three low scores. And even he sort of said after play, like, he was unhappy with particularly his second innings dismissal in Wellington, and the way he hadn't got that shot right the way he wanted to play it in the first innings here. There was pressure on him, and maybe the, you know, the fact that he kept well helped or whatever it was, but he's had more good innings than people think he's had over the last sort of 6 to 9 months. You know, the kind of the idea that after Lords he's been shit ass, it's not true. He hasn't been. He has been in patches, but he's also had some really good innings in there as well that don't quite fit the narrative, so people leave them out or don't remember them or whatever it is. But this was so much better. He was so in control. He was so composed. And it was a daunting task when he walked out. And he said he was excited to walk out. Like, okay, I've got a big job ahead of me. Let's get into it. And he looked like that. He played like that. Found a boundary early. Didn't play a lot of risky shots early. He did start to branch out a bit as the innings grew. But he had that sort of old carry ability just to tick it into gaps, just to make sure that he was in the mid-teens at about a runner ball, which is the mark of a good Alex Carey innings. And that's what he did today.
It was a stunning partnership before lunch. Like, they've added 94 in 106 balls from 5 for 80. So the overall numbers are so impressive. I have a slightly different view about his first half an hour. I thought he did try and drive about 5 balls on the up, and you're like, man, you're going to get out the way Ravindra got out in the first innings and you're going to be out of the test team. He was under pressure, and that's a good thing. I sometimes find it odd when people get so offended by a player being under the pump. It's a competitive business. Yeah. You know, if you're playing test cricket, it by definition means you've won a competitive race against one or many other human beings to get there in the first instance. So the fact that
Someone else is sitting there going, put me in, coach!
And the fact that Josh Inglis has enjoyed a really nice run for Western Australia at the same time, of course that's a worthwhile and worthy conversation. I'm sure Carey would know that himself, within himself, that that's true. So there is that sense of needing to finish this run. This is the last test of a run. They've won 6 from 7. They've got all the World Test Championship points bar those at Brisbane. That's what they were setting out to do, to hoover up as many as they could to give themselves the best opportunity to make the next final, acknowledging they have a really tough draw from here playing India. Doesn't matter that it's at home, it's India. 5 test matches and then Sri Lanka away, which won't be a walk in the park. We saw that a couple of years ago in conditions that are going to turn. There'll be 2 sandpits at wherever they're played, I'm sure, to make the most of that home ground advantage. So with all of that in mind, this was crucial. And Carey did step up. Carey did find a way, and good on him for it. And the fact that he had Mitch Marsh down the other end, we heard from, maybe it was Pat Cummins, possibly Carey said this to us on radio, that their game plan was to counter-attack this morning. Then this is where the head Marshing was so kind of bizarre when they walked out at midday an hour after play was scheduled to start. Consecutive balls hit straight to point in the air. Marsh gets away with a shocker from Ravindra. It is defining.
One of the most straightforward kind of point catches. That's exactly what, you know, if you're going to get a catch a point, that's the one you want. Maybe you want the little top edge that loops, but this was hit not really middled, straight at the sternum. Like, all that's all you do.
Had to move 1 foot to the other side, and Ravindra in the outfield was a liability at times through the test as well. We're big on Ravindra. We love Ravindra's swagger and style and backlift and stroke play and all of that. But to say, you know, if you're writing a school report, you would say room for improvement.
Room for improvement.
In many ways. And look, if he takes that catch, then head's not at next ball. And, you know, we've had a discussion on the pod many, many times about how things aren't linear when it comes to these types of things.
We went back and forth over it, talking to Brian Waddle about it. He's like, okay, well, so Marsh has cut a catch that's been dropped. Head's then cut a catch next ball and been caught. dreadful shot, by the way. I mean, both of them were. It's just in terms of the timing, like why aren't you trying to keep that ball down at that time of day? And neither of them were good balls from Saudi either. They were just sitting up there asking to be hit. But yeah, so Brian was like, okay, well, who would you rather dismiss? Like, would you rather have got Marsh out, or would you rather have got
a game of would you rather?
Yeah. And my response was, okay, well, when Travis Head goes big, he makes 150, and when Mitchell Marsh goes big, he makes 80. And so that's the difference. So I was like, as somebody on the fielding team, I'd probably rather get Travis Head out because he can totally win a game on his own. I'm like, Marsh can help them win the game, but probably won't finish it off. He got out for exactly 80, and I was just like, you know, sometimes you get them right, sometimes it feels good. Most of the time, you get them wrong. Sure. But there was that kind of feeling that you know, I mean, Marsh is such a kind of booming player of the ball, but he's got those 300s in his locker. They're all against England. He hasn't gone big very often in his Test career. So what he did was key though, was keep the scoring rate up so that he takes the new ball out of the equation completely. They're never going to face a new ball because he's made that 80 in such quick time, and because Carey's gone along with him and done that.
Yeah, they've won the Test in 65 overs, so we're a full hour away from needing that. And yeah, most of that scoreboard pressure was applied before lunch, where and I know there's a controversial leg before moment there, and I don't want to get too deeply into that because it's so difficult with the camera angles we were seeing, but, you know, specialist TV umpires, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I'm going to say on that front.
The one with Mitchell Marsh
and Glenn Phillips, and was the spike the bat. You know, you feel for the third umpire because they're in an NVIDIA situation because there's a spike, therefore you've got to say with the ball nearby, but it doesn't look like it on the angle of the bat. You know what I'm trying to say?
Therefore I am. Yep. Well, we might as well get into it. So Matt Henry comes back on having bowled a 9-over spell the previous evening and looked shagged. He gets one ball to jag massively, smacks Carey on the pad, umpire gives it, Carey reviews it. Carey did not look at all confident. He looked like he thought he was out because it had come back in so far. But actually it had done too much. It had gone so far that it was missing the leg stump on the review. So he gets away with that one that was, you know, clearly correct on the overturn.
Come on, Jim. I can see Jim wants to jump in. Come on, mate.
Pop in.
You haven't been on the pod for a while. Here's Jim Maxwell, who's been on God knows how many tours of New Zealand. Give us your parting thoughts as you leave these shores again.
New Zealand had a crack. But, you know, if you don't take your catches against these blokes, they'll make you pay, won't they? Mm. But what I love is the pluckiness of Pat Cummins. His first test, winning runs. Mm. Edgbaston, winning runs. Today, he was a dead set certainty. You couldn't have got any more money on him to hit the winning runs in this game. So it was a wonderful finish for him in the Aussie team. I thought, despite the fact that their top order batting is crap, they keep winning. So they won't change the team, will they?
I doubt it, Jim. You go off with Wads. We'll go get a cordial later on.
Enjoy it, boys.
Nice. How good is that?
Thank you, Jim.
A cameo with Jim Maxwell on the ground as we wind down the series. We've got plenty to talk about still. Jeff, have you finished saying your piece on the review?
Okay, so there's that one, which is a nice, clear, easy overturn. It's missing their stump by a mile. And then Glenn Phillips comes on. And before I get to this, my God, Tim Southey, captaincy, absolute dross today. Absolute garbage today. And it is easy to make judgments after the fact, but you could see this before the fact. Glenn Phillips tied Mitchell Marsh in knots during the World Cup when they played at Dharamshala. Yes. Marsh was like 35 off 55 balls after coming in with Australia going at 10 and over. Phillips bowled 10 overs straight, 3 for 37, and Mitchell Marsh could not score a run off him. And he gets Alex Carey out in the first innings here with a ball that turns that dreadful shot that lobs into the hands of mid-wicket. Travis Head gets out. You've got Carey coming in and Marsh coming in. What do you do if you're a captain who's got some smarts and who's actually considered the context?
Who are you going to call? Glenn Phillips.
Dare I say matchups? Did it. And filibusters. Filibusters? That's us talking for a really long time. Just didn't bring him on. He brings him on when they're both past 50. Carey and Marsh have both got half centuries by the time Phillips comes on to bowl. And he comes on to bowl. What does he come on to bowl? One over before lunch.
Straight
one
off.
Over before.
Nearly gets Marsh in the process.
Which is what brought me to this in the first place. But Jesus Christ, like that's like the 1910 MCC captaincy handbook. Oh, why don't you give one of your spinners an over before lunch? Like that's what you do if the spinner is Travis Head, not if the wicket that's fallen is Travis Head. Like you give that to a part-timer to see what happens. That's like, that is such old-fashioned, dull, boring captaincy from someone who only thinks about seam bowling. I cannot believe that he didn't try Phillips against them. He's taken five for at Wellington. He's got Carey in the first innings here, going for bugger all off the few overs that he was allowed to bowl. Why, as a bowling captain, are you so reluctant to bowl your spinner because you don't have a specialist spinner. You've got, this is the next best thing. Ravindra didn't bowl at all. Like, maybe it's worth having a try with the left arm stuff. It was so unimaginative, just colour by numbers captaincy. Mm. It was dull. And you know, frankly, they deserve to lose based on that.
Yeah, well, there are so many other reasons why they didn't deserve to win. And that pains me to say it because, yeah, you know, you rock up here this morning and you're thinking about the history and what it would mean for world cricket. And I don't want to patronise New Zealand because it's not reasonable to do that about a side that won the World Test Championship only 3.5 years ago, mm-hmm, whatever it was. Not even that, 2.5 years ago. But against Australia, there's this huge block. They win here. They're in second spot on the World Test Championship. Mm-hmm. Australia with work to do. They might make the final again. They dropped this because of the waiting in the two-test series. And they're a long way off now with 5 tests coming up in Asia.
Yeah.
And look, how they go there will dictate whether they make it through. But I wouldn't say they're likely to do well in India based on what India do to everyone, mm-hmm, who rocks up there. And eventually they marmalise them, right?
Yep.
So there's that going on. Then there's the drop catch piece. There's the, you know, the Ravindra drop, which feeds into a wider story here about the big moments. About when the biggest moments were there throughout the course of the two test matches, New Zealand, with the exception of yesterday, weren't up to it.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest moments, I think you made the point a few days ago, New Zealand are at their best when they're way behind in the game, and that's when they rally.
Mm.
They can't get ahead in a game in the way that they need to put themselves into a match-winning position. And when they need to finish the job like they did today, they couldn't do that either. So, this is a side that's in transition. Southie's the captain at the moment, 100th test. Is he in the best 11 for Asia? And he's got a good record there, but, or are you taking Sears?
I don't know if he's in the best 11
ripping,
here.
Put it to one side. Are you taking, now that's in the rear vision mirror, are you taking Sears out of law school for a few weeks and going, Ben, we you know, you can do some study abroad. You can go and study at, you know, the University of Mumbai for a semester. We need you to play a couple of test matches.
Yeah.
I would say that.
Study at the University of getting panned around some grounds in India.
Well,
I
think he'll probably reverse it.
Yeah.
My sense watching him bowl over the last four
will
or five
lay
days.
Lay it down and flip it before he reverses it.
And O'Rourke last week as well. You know, this is all in the future, but they will at the big moments. He did stuff up last night. Yeah. I understand the tendency. I understand the desire to try and break Australia from 32 for 4. Bowling Henry into the ground last night, 9 overs. He did look shot today. Bowled from the wrong side of the fucking wicket to Alex Carey. Why is he bowling around the wicket to a bloke who's trying to flay you through cover on the up? Mm. Give your slips a chance. Mm. Have more than one slip at the end when they need to get, there's like 30
nearly,
or 20
nearly
or 30
got him
runs
with
to
the,
get.
With the ball decking in though.
20
so
or 30 runs
that.
To get. And
there
20, well, the one that decked away and didn't get it. Like there are so many little inflection points. And the last thing I'll say on this, the last thing I'll say on this New Zealand bit before we move off it, is Daryl Mitchell on our coverage after play today. It would have been nice to have won, but we're not going to be defined by our performances. At the fucking
you're
game
not,
of cricket.
You're not going to be defined by your performances.
By definition.
By your results.
By definition. By their results. Right. My apologies. Okay. We're not going to be defined by our results.
Okay.
I mean, that is just mumbo jumbo. Of course you're going to be defined by your results. When you've got your feet up when you're retired and when you're long gone out of the game. He went on to say lovely platitudinal things in relation to bringing young people out here and enjoying the contest and being part of a great test match.
Great.
All of that's true, but there you are. You are. You are defined as an international athlete by what you do when the big moments arrive.
And it
drop
helps.
Catches and poor decisions and 8 for 60 on the first day when the heat was on. These are the bits that will be remembered from this test series, not the nice rally at Wellington where they batted for an hour without losing a wicket on the third afternoon. Probably not Tom Latham's 73 yesterday, as good as it was. They'll be remembered for what happened when they lost the test match, not when they nearly got back into it.
If you want to bring people through and all the rest of it, it probably helps to win. It's not the only thing. Like you can win and still be a team of pricks, as we've seen from many Australian teams in
and
the
you
past.
Can, and you can be a team of really nice blokes like this Australian team at the moment who've changed the way they go about it and be bloody successful as well. Win ugly.
So, you can be a successful team that still alienates people.
Yeah.
But you are more likely to not alienate people if you are a successful team. Does that make sense? Is that a reasonable way to formulate it? I did want to touch on that DRS thing because I didn't get to it earlier because I think it is worth talking about. This is Phillips coming on, bowling to Mitchell Marsh, who's hit on the toe, just bounces in front. So, it's not the going on with the arm thing, but the ball looks like it's going pretty straight. It's hit him in front of middle and off, and he's got the bat somewhere near it. And it was given not out, right? And they review it. And there's a burble on the sound graph as it sort of goes near the bottom corner of the bat, which is called a spike by the third umpire, who kind of has to because they have to, but it isn't. Like I'm very confident from having spent a lot of my life looking at sound waves and the different way that they work. That's a different sound. That's a foot moving on the ground, or
that's Soundwave Festival,
or a bad Soundwave Festival.
R.I.P.
I don't think it panned out too well. I feel like the last couple things didn't go well. I can't remember expressly how.
It's in the big music festival in the sky with Big Day Out.
Am I thinking of Stereo Sonic? What did they used to call it? Steroid Sonic. was what it was called. It was all the dudes in the tiny singlets with the big biceps doing, you know,
R.I.P.'s
into it.
R.I.P.'s is all I want to say.
Get the glow sticks out, Steve O'Keefe. Secret set, 3 a.m. now dropping. I think that, I mean, we didn't see the ball tracking on it, but it looks like it was probably going to be out. I think it probably was out. And again, it's that the technology they have isn't actually up to distinguishing what's going on in those situations where there are so many moving parts in terms of what has made a noise. All it can tell you is that a noise has been made, but I don't think it was a bat on ball noise, and the pictures don't seem to line up.
Yeah, so we're not audio experts either, right? So we're not saying that, oh, well, we think it didn't hit the bat, therefore.
Well, I did say that. Yes, yeah, but what I just said.
Right, but you're not saying that. You're not saying you're an expert in sound technology.
I'm not an expert, but I know a bit more than the average person, is all.
Okay, but there are people who know a dance site more than you as well. Let's put them in there.
Yeah.
Let's get the guys in there, or the girls in there, or the robots in there. It could be AI. Get whoever it is in there who can make that distinction and get them up there. Even if it's alongside, like I've softened on this a little bit, if you want to have your existing third umpire in collaboration with sound technicians.
Yeah. Featuring.
Featuring.
Third umpire, feet, Sean Paul.
Maybe the other way around, you know, audio technicians featuring Michael Goff. That's fine. But yeah, the current system as it is. Anyway, it wasn't a huge part of the day, but it did at the time when we went to lunch.
You heard the new collab between Michael Goff and Lizzo.
Be still my beating heart. Right, so anyway, then they take the two wickets and you think for a minute, you know, 59 to get on the hat trick, the ball that gets marshed, which is just too quick and too good, and I love Sears. I love everything about him. I love his emotional response when he takes wickets. There is something there. There is a proper sort of test cricketer in all of that package. And but I just want to go to one more thing, though. Southie fucked that up as well. You know, Sears takes the two wickets, bowls another over, and another, and he's knackered by the end. Mm. As Jeremy Coney astutely pointed out, if you had whipped him off with, say, 30 or so runs to get, you have one more pop with Henry down at this end, or someone else, or Phillips, you still have time to bring him back for one last push.
Yep.
There was the chance for a two-spell. Yeah, yeah. A two-stop strategy, if you like.
The chance that he's bowling to Nathan Lyon at that point, or Josh Hazlewood.
Exactly. And the chance that he's bowling to 10 and 11, and he can come on with four runs to get and bowl an in-swinging Yorker and win the test match with the yard that he's got and the other ones don't have. And and that was another. I don't want to get the boots completely into Southie in a 100th test match. Look, he took a wicket to open things up today. It was a great test match, but I think with the benefit of hindsight, he'll reflect on some of those bits and pieces as well, and what the future holds for him is yet to be determined. He said he wants to continue, though. I think he was asked in the press conference, Brad told me, that this was put to him, whether he might retire, and that's he's got no current plans for that.
Well, I don't know how closely they will look at it, because so many players who we talk to go, oh, no, everything's good, everything's fine, we're totally confident with everything. And, of course, they can't give too much away outward-facing to media people, but there is a tendency just to back what they're doing and not necessarily reflect on it. But anyway, it's that point. It's the pace to marsh that swings in and it's hitting him on the pad, and it's umpire's call on leg stump, but it's given out on the field. And then it's pace at Stark, who's probably just blinking a bit, having, you know, not really expected to be out there so quickly. Who splices it away to square leg, 3 to get, 59 to defend, but they don't.
A few other bits and pieces before the Hall of Fame. You look at Australia's last five wickets through the series, 227 in the first innings at Wellington, 37 in the brain explosion innings second time around, 98 here, which was important in context at the time after they lost some early wickets on the second day, and 199 they needed today. They got 201 because Cummins won the game with a boundary. So their lower order has probably outperformed their top order in terms of runs acquired for the final five wickets. That's been a sign of Australia's strength as well. Hazlewood, highest score for 6 years. Stark made 28 in the first innings. Cummins makes 70-odd runs for the test match. Lyon made it to 20 twice in the series. So, you know, they're pulling their weight on that front. I've got
Josh Hazlewood average more than most of the top order.
Player of the series in a losing effort, 2-0. Matt Henry, that's a nice rarity and oddity. But 17 wickets at 14, I think it was.
Yeah.
You couldn't doubt that he was a candidate. I did think maybe Nathan Lyon, 13 at 12.5, plus a 10-wicket match,
runs.
Plus some runs. Also, Josh Hazlewood took
Henry
his wickets.
Henry made runs too, though.
At 17. Henry did. to be fair, mate. And so did Hazelwood.
He made 40-odd cumulatively in this test match, plus 42 in Wellington, plus another few in the second innings.
And Green as well with the other one, given just how important his solo performance was there, plus 2 wickets with the ball. Look, there wasn't an obvious candidate, so it's a split the difference thing, but Henry wins that award for the first time.
Who played really well in both test matches? Matt Henry.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
I think that's
well, let's,
fair enough.
Let's go to the Hall of Fame.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
The Final Word Hall of Fame for the final time in our daily shows for the time being, although we will talk about them in more depth tomorrow. Seabus Super, as we say, you know the story. 8.89, average return, 40th birthday. My 40th birthday this year as well. But I'm not, you know, I'm
you're
still...
You're not an industry super fan.
I'm not an industry super fan. I'm a human
you're
being.
You're part of an industry
I'm a
super
human
fan.
Being. I'm a part of one of these ones.
As which are also us. Made up of human beings. Industry super fans are comprised... of human beings.
A real human being and a real hero. That song at the end of Drive. Great flick. They, Seabus, celebrating this year, partnering with us as they have. They make this kind of stuff along with our patrons possible that we can travel around and cover games and do the things that we wish to do. So we thank them for it. Get your super sorted out. Do it in 2024. Do it in an anniversary year. Do it in a milestone year. Seabussuper.com.au. Let them take it from there, or you can get in touch with us even after we've finished talking about them. If you, in a month's time, wake up and go, fuck, should have sorted my super out. Forgot to do it then. We will still... be able to put you in touch with the right people there. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance. I've just got a couple here, Jeff. First of all, Aussie families out there. I think Alex Carey's young lad stole the player of the match trophy and was running around the field.
He stole one of the other... No, because they had two trophies. There was the actual trophy and there was a sponsor's trophy.
Oh, yeah, the Trans-Tasman, which was quite nice, and then the one that's named after some meat.
Some chicken supplier. Yeah.
How about the $1,000 for... was it the player of the series, Matt Henry, got $1,000 worth of meat?
Okay. Yeah, nice.
There you go. Have that.
Yeah, fresh. Yeah, keep yourself in good nick over the off-season.
throwing the hat around.
Eat a barbecue chicken every day. what do they call it? The bachelor's handbag.
Bachelor's handbag.
The supermarket roast chook. Nonetheless, I've got one. It also involves Matt Henry because everything's involved Matt Henry recently. You know, the sort of the cliche of the nice New Zealanders. I had a little chat to him for the radio afterwards, and my God, it is like distressingly true. He was so nuts for a guy who's just taken 9 wickets in a close loss. You'd expect like pain, you'd expect anguish. A big smile on his face. He was like, pretty frustrating, but look, we did everything we could. We threw everything at him. We couldn't quite get there. And he's holding his little baby, and she's trying to grab the microphone and eat it, and you know, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
But he was just the nicest and most patient person. Considering I probably wouldn't want to talk to somebody had I just taken. Not that this is a dream, different scenario. But say you play that well in a match and not quite got there, and everyone else is. Buggered it up and let you down. Like, probably wouldn't be wanting to have chats with people from the broadcaster from another country.
Yep.
Probably wouldn't be doing that. I was deeply impressed by his demeanor.
I'm impressed by them being. I'm impressed by that too. But I sort of come back to my earlier point. Is that a symptom? Is at some deeper level, is that a symptom that I don't want to sound all sort of like puffing my chest out, nonsense, fake machismo stuff. But like, shouldn't they be fucking despairing at that point because of what's happened?
He was definitely unhappy. He just was very generous in that unhappiness.
Yeah. You know? Anyway, that's the end of this. Oh, sorry, one more thing. I saw Adele Moray Erasmus's wife on the way out there. She was so happy for
good
him.
Singer.
But yeah, she was so happy for him that he had a good test, and he did. They both had good test matches, better than good. I thought they did a great job, the on-field umpires, Nitin Menon and Murray Erasmus, were well served across both tests. But Murray,
do you think her song is Rock and Rolling in the Deep?
Well, I don't know, my head's all over the place right now. Murray Erasmus gets to go home. He turned 60 last week, the big boy. That's his last test match, 82 and done. I know we've talked about it on the pod already, but I'm glad that he had such a good test. And he was the one who gave that decision where Marsh was out on 80. It was umpire's call, and it was his call that Marsh was gone.
Yep.
And it's out.
I thought it was a right decision. It looked good. It was swinging back in a little bit. It was quick, and it bashed the pad in front of middle and leg.
And it gave us the chance for a couple of minutes to dream of a tie in a test match.
It'll
happen one day.
Yeah, and a hat-trick.
That's it from New Zealand. Well, not strictly true. We're going to record our weekly episode from our Airbnb, I suspect, tomorrow before we... you hit the road and I jump in a plane and we do other things. We'll do a story time then as well. Cam and Vish have done the wrap-up episode from Dharamshala, if that's your vibe. We've got a lot to come. Last thought is that I've loved being here for Test cricket again after 8 years. It's such a shame that we don't know when the next New Zealand-Australia Test Series is. It should be every fourth year. There's no reason why that these teams shouldn't be playing each other on the same cycle as England, Australia and India do. Hopefully the administrators who are out here doing their thing this week can have those conversations and we can get closer to that because, this is the least Australia can do is come over here every fourth year.
It's the final word, New Zealand-Australia Daily, day four from Christchurch, signing off from this series. If you like what we're doing, patreon.com/thefinalword. Thanks to CBus, Jeff Lemon, Adam Collins. See you later.
Bye.
We've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty.